This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code number 19-ish. This week we're going to focus on pajama-driven development, looking at scenarios for working remotely or working with a distributed team and some of the software as a service providers out there that enable this kind of work and what kind of tools are available for the modern developer trying to work from home and have it all. What really kind of kicked off this topic for me was when I saw that GE was switching from Google Docs to Zoho and the fact that they were using Google Docs for, you know, over 40,000 of their workers, or at least had it enabled, was kind of surprising. And then the fact that they were for switching to another software as a service provider kind of surprised me. And I know, John, you work remotely. K-Scott is a road warrior. And we certainly, at our job, have the capability, at my company that I work at, have the capability for working from home. And is also a deal with some overseas development and QA staff. And so I was just going to kind of take a census and talk about what software people have found useful and what other pieces of software you've tried and they haven't worked out or anything like that. John?
The first one that jumps to mind is the service we're all using right now, which is Skype. I've just been really happy with Skype. Digital calls to each other, digital calls to, and I have a phone number in the same area code as Vertigo up in the Bay Area, and I'm able to call out to people's cell phones and conference calls and all that. So I think that's a great service for remote distributed working.
So when you're working remotely, besides Skype, you're mostly on Visual Studio Team System, and you're doing that over HTTP, or are you VPNing in and using remote desktop, and you have a little, you know, machine under someone's desk there?
No, and we talked about that when I started, but I work fully remote, so I access Team System over HTTPS, and most of the services, all the extranet and Outlook Web and Outlook Exchange are all available over HTTPS.
So what's that performance like? If you subscribe to notifications and you see a whole bunch of change chat sets come through overnight, or while you're away, do you go, arg, I'm gonna be here for hours?
I think Team Systems, and I'm not working on enormous projects. I'm usually working on relatively small projects, and I've generally been fortunate to be kind of the lead developer on most of these, so most of the changes are changes I'm making. But overall, when I'm checking out work that other people do, it comes down really quick. So I think Team System works well for that. Team System, though, is definitely not designed for distributed work. It kind of works, but it's definitely the kind of thing where if you've worked... My previous job, I worked with 5 other developers, and all of us were in different cities, and we saw each other maybe once a year, and we all worked with Subversion, which is just great for that kind of thing. It's designed for distributed working, and it's really easy to just edit your files and you merge on commit, and the Team System can work in that setup, but it's really, you're kind of fighting it to do that. But overall, the network performance is good. Yeah, overall, I mean, one benefit really of working remote is I get to be my own IT shop. So if I need network help, I've got a great network department at Vertigo. But if I want to install other software, if I want to change around how my network's set up or add a new computer or whatever, that's all on me. So that's, from my point of view, I kind of like that. Having worked at some bigger companies where it was locked down and I couldn't get work done because, they had crazy policies.
Crazy IT people and their crazy security.
Well, not just crazy security, wacky. But yeah, just silliness sometimes where it was like, I remember one time we were working on a system and we had to add virus checking into a website, you know, so if people uploaded a Word document that had a virus, we'd scan it and kick it out. And there's a known test virus. It's like icar.txt, E-I-C-A-R, and it's a known standard that all virus scanners will automatically, if they see that text file, they go, oh, well, you know, I found a virus, and it's just, you know, it's a test. But so we checked that into source control, and, you know, the IT shop saw it and went through their standard procedures for a virus on the network and locked down the network for more than a day. And we were, you know, we were trying to show them what was going on, but of course we didn't have access to the internet to pull up the documents. And so, you know, I mean, it's just kind of nice to be my own IT shop from that kind of thing.
Hey, so we've recently, we ditched, we had an internal wiki set up and at work, and we've started moving the content or grandfathering in content, I guess, over into Google Sites. And we've been sharing Google documents, you know, for different user stories and requirements and just general information for a while. And if we could only ditch Exchange and go with, you know, Gmail and Gcalendar, I'd be pretty happy. But I don't think that's going to go. And most of the time when I hear people who work remotely, they're still somehow connecting to Exchange server. It's like a tick that's dug in. People just can't move completely off of Exchange and the calendaring and into, you know, an online calendaring system. That's usually what people are keeping it for. They're okay moving their email, but they're keeping they have to be able to schedule things on the calendar that's shared, and trying to share a single online calendar with a group of people is pretty darn hard.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it comes down to, you know, if there's different scenarios, and one is where you have a very distributed company that at its core is distributed, and in that case, everyone's just kind of used to, you know, hey, well, let's use this new application, let's do this, and it's a kind of more of a cooperative IT environment. But when it's when you have a case where you've got a larger company and you've got some remote employees, you end up kind of working with more of a satellite scenario where you still have kind of the kind of big heavy internal IT with, you know, team system and Exchange or whatever, the, you know, that sort of thing, where it's hosted locally and then you've just got remote access to it.
And that's quite a bit different than kind of a distributed scenario like Git or GitHub enables, or even SVN is still hosted somewhere, but Git is a different beast altogether. Has anyone here used Git for SEM and in a distributed development, either an open source project or anything else? No. Yeah, I've forked a couple of projects, you know, just in terms of getting it and wanting to work with it and maybe make some modifications, but I haven't used it on a project yet. Primarily because the client or the software is still in the do-it-yourself phase, you know, even on Linux, which it's built for, you know, there's still a lot of dependencies you have to grab and you have to build it. OS X, there's a couple of pre-built clients out there, and I used, MySGit or something like that for Windows, which basically just is a wrapper for the bash shell. which I thought was kind of funny, but I haven't really used Git for much.
Yeah, I've played with it. You know, my cynical impression of it is that Git is an awesome source control system for building Linux because that's what it was built for. And then I didn't see a whole lot of advantages on the kind of projects I'm working on where I don't have the need to fork and work remotely all the time. I don't know. Maybe I just don't understand. You know, it's probably the kind of thing I've heard people say, well, you have to use it and you'll see why it's great. But so far. And I know some people use Git to Subversion, and so then you've got the local versioning, and then but you've still got the central, you know, the standard.
The ability to fork off and
exactly,
and you know, fork it yourself and whatever. Yeah, it. Well, one of the problems is that we're primarily all Windows developers, and we're locked into these damn project files and solution files that define kind of how our code is connected. And you don't see that so much in the Linux and I mean, you do to a certain extent with OS X and Xcode, but even then it's, you know, it's not a, if you drop a file in the directory, in an Xcode directory, you know, it's easy to get it in and easy to edit it. And if you build and say build star dot, you know, C, you know, it'll pick it up. Whereas, you know, the Visual Studio Builder, MS Build, will freak out if files aren't included in the project file or if it's not included correctly. And so it kind of makes it harder for kind of remote or distributed development. Just because, you know, we've always done the check-in dance with the project files and someone will change the spacing on a project file and you do a get and suddenly you're having to merge this obtuse file. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, Git actually sounds really appealing in a lot of ways, but, you know, somebody who just lives in the Microsoft tools and Visual Studio and stuff, you know, even using Subversion, using just the native Subversion tooling without something like Visual SVN, can cause a lot of pain, cause a lot of friction. You know, dealing with renamed files and the IDE changes something that Subversion doesn't know about. And so for a Visual Studio developer, it sounds like my understanding is that just the tooling integration with Git is just not there yet. You know, I'm hopeful that it will be at some point, and I definitely would love to be able to at least experiment with it. Although I have to say, as somebody who only relatively recently migrated their company's source control system from SourceSafe to Subversion, I'm not dying to go through that process again. But if it's a, you know, if there's really compelling advantages, I definitely would love to play with it.
So we've talked about the source control, and we kind of mentioned Skype as a way to keep communication flowing. Does anyone here do video conferencing when they're working remotely?
Yeah, we do a little bit of that. I've got a webcam set up, and we did for a while. We did our daily stand-ups for Scrums over webcam. And it was nice, and we also used them a little bit for client meetings. It's the kind of thing where, again, for Vertigo, I'm more of a satellite employee than working at a, you know, it's not like really part of the company's DNA. However, we do a Friday stand-up, and recently they've put a lot of effort into setting up a video feed for our Friday company stand-up, and those have been just really cool. It's nice to feel like once a week I'm part of the group there, and you know, I can listen, I can interact on chat and all that, and so that's just been really neat. Well, I'm curious, you know, K-Scott, you travel quite a bit. I'm curious how that works, like if you're connecting in.
I travel a bit, and I also work remotely a few days a week, even when I'm home. And one of the primary project I'm on is with a company that uses Team Foundation Server. And I've never used TFS remotely. I have two machines at that company. I terminal service into both of them. And I've found a program. It's on CodePlex. It's called Terminals. I found that to be invaluable for remote desktop work because it sets up a nice tabbed interface to multiple machines. You can set up machines as favorites. So it's basically just one-click operation, and you're logged onto a machine remotely. And so all of my development work is done on a remote desktop. And it generally works out pretty well. Then some of the other things I use, I probably use Messenger more than Skype. for a long time, I used FolderShare, and even before FolderShare was acquired by Microsoft to synchronize files. And then for a while, I was trying Groove, which was kind of hideous. I won't say hideous. It kind of worked, but there were times when it would consume about half a gigabyte of RAM and spin the CPU, and I could never quite understand what it was doing. But then the whole live mesh thing came out, and I installed mesh, and I've been using that to synchronize stuff, and that's worked out pretty well. So I synchronize a lot of stuff. I synchronize, I have one particular folder on all my desktops that I just call shared. And whenever I have something that I want to take on the road or just get on all my machines, like it might be a Word document or it might be, you know, a zipped up source code, I'll just drop it in that shared folder. But I also synchronize things like my OneNote notebooks. I keep a lot of notes in those. I can synchronize my Internet Explorer favorites, synchronize my Visual Studio developer settings if I just keep those exported to the right directory. So that's me. I'm mostly about RDP and synchronizing stuff. I have a Gmail account, and I subscribe to a couple of mailing lists through that, but I'm mostly still centered on my desktop. I keep RDP open on my home machine. Generally, what I do when I check my mail is RDP to a desktop that sits in my house still and look at Outlook.
Kevin?
So like, I'm a more occasionally remote user, I think, but I generally work more like K. Scott does, where I remote into my my desktop at the office. And every once in a while, I think back to what life was before remote desktop, and it was VNC. And I like cringe at how like awful the experience was of VNC compared to remote desktop or even PC Anywhere, going even further back. And it was just VNC is just such a seamless, remote desktop, it's such a seamless experience and just so smooth that it really has kind of ruined me for remote access. I can't really go, every once in a while I have to go back to some crap VNC client, and maybe it's improved by now, but the VNC that I knew and the remote desktop that I know now are nothing, you know, not comparable in any respect. And it's really what enables me to work remotely. It's really just a killer tool.
I haven't even bothered to do anything other than remote in to work. You know, I connect it via the VPN and then just remote desktop straight to my desk at work there. In fact, I do the same thing at home. I've got a desktop machine set up at my workshop and there's no connecting door. So I either have to go around outside and kind of bury myself in my man cave and work, or I can just grab the laptop and remote desktop in from anywhere in my house to that workstation, and it works great. John?
Well, yeah, that brings up two things for me. One is I think a lot of people that use VNC a lot don't realize the difference in architecturally how they work. Like VNC is sending differences in the screen between, because it's set up to work on all different kinds of operating systems, whereas remote desktop is really keyed in towards Windows, and it sends the screen drawing commands over. That's what the remote desktop protocol does, and so it's way faster because it's drawing everything on your desktop, which is pretty cool. And K. Scott, you mentioned before that you use mesh, and the experience isn't near as fast. I wouldn't want to use it a lot, but you can use mesh. Also includes remote desktop access for any of your machines that are running the client, which is nice if you're like stuck in a hotel room and you're like, oh shoot, I forgot to do this whatever thing. It's not very fast access, but it's great for kind of emergency type remote access. But the other thing that you brought up was the thing about the man cave, and I think that's hugely important. Anyone that I know that's worked remote for a long period of time, the only way that's been successful is if they have a separate office that's your office door is closed and you go to work. Like anyone that I know that, you know, it's okay if you're working remote, work from home every now and then, and you know, maybe you're sitting with your laptop and writing up a spec or something, but if you're really seriously going to get work done remote, you have to be separate from the rest of your family. You have to be away from distractions like a TV and all that stuff. I think that sounds kind of obvious, but it's something where I've heard so many people, it's like, yeah, I tried working from home, but my wife was always coming in and asking me to do an errand or whatever. And it's just, you know, that doesn't work long term.
I'd agree with that. Although sometimes it's nice to get out of the house and work from a coffee shop or, you know, not that I would ever do this, but a bar that has Wi-Fi, or, you know, just anywhere, just somewhere, you know, you get inspired when you change your surroundings. I actually find that I can get more work done if I work from home some days because I'm more focused. I have less drop-in distractions, less meetings to attend, either impromptu or scheduled. And just in general, you know, you get in there, even if you have your own office and you can shut the door, there's still stuff going on outside. You can hear people talking and there's all sorts of stuff. And it's easier to shut down the email, I find, as well as if you're just holed up somewhere by yourself. John?
Yeah, there's a very timely article called Home Sweet Office in the latest issue of Wired. That's the October 2008 issue. And that's one of the things they bring up is the whole idea of productivity because you're able to focus. And they somewhere in here they mentioned that on average, someone did a study and there's on average people in an office workplace are distracted every 3 minutes by something, you know. And so there's some of those are very good distractions and some of those are distractions that keep you from actually just focusing and getting things done. I love the ability to just say, I'm doing this task and that's what I'm doing today. And just, you know, unless I get an email that says, no, you're not, you know, I'm able to really just kind of drill into that. And then also work whenever, like, sometimes I have some flexibility where it's like, hey, I want to get this thing done. I'm going to work tonight until 2 a.m. because I just want to get it done.
Well, John, I'm actually curious because I feel like, you know, working in the office, the sort of the hallway conversations that happen, the, you know, overhearing a conversation and jumping in, the informal communication is so important that one of the big downsides of working remotely is you just don't have that. You don't have the incidental contact. I'm curious as to how you deal with that and whether you have found that to be impactful to your work.
Yeah. So there's two parts to that. One is the conversations you'd have with your coworkers about things that are specific to your office. And it's true. I do miss out on that. And the only things I try and get involved as much as I can. I always get involved in email threads and, make sure to call in for the company stand-ups and all that. But it's true. I do miss out, you know, and I also make a point of flying up as often as works out, you know, for projects or seeing people at conferences. But I do miss out on that side. On the plus side, I'm able to be more intentional about the conversations I have. So instead of a random conversation with, you know, the group secretary about something I'm not really very interested in, I seek out conversations with other people who have information I really want to know about. So, for instance, I found Twitter to be, you know, some people say Twitter is a waste of time, but I think it's all about what people you follow and what conversations you get involved in. And I found a huge amount of information coming in there. I also get involved in conversations like on Stack Overflow and things like that. So I think the idea is, yeah, you have to be careful not to waste time with those conversations the same way that you could waste time. You know, there's always somebody in every office that is always talking about what happened on Lost last week and not really actually doing any kind of work. So, you know what I mean? It's a trade-off, and the thing I find that keeps me honest is I keep busy with work and I commit to a lot of work. And so, you know, that I can't waste too much time, but I find that the trade-off is beneficial because if I spend a lot of time in places that actually provide me a lot of information, I get more work done because I have the information I need to. So short answer is yes, I miss out on incidental conversations, but I'm able to participate in more intentional conversations.
So I don't know if anyone else has heard of this or maybe this is something that came to me in a fever dream, but there's a process called rubber ducking, where it's the act of explaining something out loud helps you to clarify your thinking and often leads you to a solution. And I think it was there was a developer in the UK, I think, who was kind of the lone developer in his office. There weren't any others, and so he would set up a little rubber duck on his desk, and he would talk to it, and he would explain whatever problem he was having with the code to it. And just the fact of explaining it out loud, the solution would often come to him. So I'm wondering how you handle that when you're working remotely. I'll send it out on Twitter. More recently, I've been putting it on Stack Overflow. A couple of questions, even if I end up answering them myself. In the past, I used to blog about them and just see what kind of comments would come in. So does anyone have any ways that is Twitter the best way to kind of keep that tradition going, I guess?
I mean, it does bring up a good point, which is that, I'm a big fan of working collaboratively, like talking issues out with people, and a lot of that happens in our office, sort of ad hoc. Like, we don't go we haven't, although I would love to go the full pair programming route, but sort of joint, sitting in somebody's cube and hash out designs is incredibly valuable. So finding a substitute for that for remote use would be, really, really tough, I would think. I mean, you have IM, you have phones, but I don't know, something about sitting in a cube and drawing on a whiteboard is really effective for me.
Again, that is true, and you do lose some fidelity by being remote. But before, like, I worked in that company with, Phil Hack and Steve Harmon, especially, I would work with them, where we'd call on Skype, and Skype has an unlimited plan, so we just leave it running for 4 hours, and we just talk while we're working, and then we'd also use, like, right now, the best one for shared desktop I would use is Vista Shared View. So, like, once a week or so, I'll have I'll talk to Rob Connery, and he'll say, "Hey, check this out," and we'll just scribble something out in Shared View, and he's in Hawaii and I'm in San Diego, and that works pretty well. So, we've got video chat going, we've got Shared View for the desktop, and we're not at the same desk, but you're able to collaborate in that way.
There's a lot of fuss made about, Google Docs and the online office and, Web 2.0 eating Microsoft's lunch. And I'm curious whether you guys find yourselves using those sort of online tools, on a serious basis. I mean, at my house, I have three PCs and one at the office, and I'm sure, that puts me pretty low on the geek status totem pole as far as hardware. And I find that increasingly having stuff chained to any particular desktop is kind of a drag. And so we talk about synchronization, which is one approach, but, obviously the other approach is you store it all in the cloud approach. And I've started doing a little bit of that with Google Docs, but I haven't gone full bore with it. I'm curious whether you guys have.
I don't usually edit documents at Google Docs. I used to use Zoho a lot, mainly for the project management and spreadsheets and things like that. But mostly, what I've been using a lot is I used FolderShare a lot. Again, even before they got acquired by Microsoft. But recently, I ditched FolderShare and I've started using Dropbox, which is amazing. You talk about having several different machines and having things chained to it. Well, I've got a Windows laptop, a 64-bit Windows machine, which is going to be going to a different OS here pretty soon, and then I've got my OS X iBook or OS 10, sorry, iBook. And I find that, being able to drop work files or Microsoft Word documents into my Dropbox folder, they get synced up, instantly. And, that I'm able to just access them wherever I need to. But I've also been a huge fan of flash drives and portableapps.com. Just being able to keep some very simple things on there, like a portable Firefox with some bookmarks set up. Oh, what else do I have on there? I've got, like a virtual Game Boy Advance emulator on there and some ROMs of games that I own legally. And, just being able to transfer files and things like that around on the flash drives makes it easier. So I'm not, I am storing things in a cloud. It just happens to be a cloud that fits in my pocket. But I haven't gone the full, live your life on Amazon S3 or anything like that. But I could, if I had a need to run a distributed team, or if I was setting up a startup, and I've talked about this with some of my friends before, not starting up a startup, but how would you go about it? I don't really see the need to have on-site servers other than maybe a small one or a co-located one for, hosting the sensitive documents or the project. But for the most part, I think that you can get away with Google Docs, a co-located server, and maybe a box.net account for everybody or something else to that effect. John?
Yeah, that is a great thing, that to be able to pay as you go with all that stuff is really nice. You have incremental costs instead of big upfront costs. So that's really nice from a business point of view. And talking about how you were synchronizing things and all that, that's one thing that I've been happy about with the work from home is I don't really have to worry about that as much. I still have folder shares set up. I've got things to keep, bookmarks in sync between my desktop and my laptop and all that. But it's really nice to not have to worry about like, oh, shoot, I left for work and I left that stuff at home. I'm sitting on my desk.
I found that I've completely outsourced my bookmarks, my browser bookmarks, to Delicious. There's just no reason to have those bookmarks in an XML file sitting on a hard drive, or HTML hard drive in the case, or HTML file in the case of Firefox. Just to be able to sync them up there. Even if I don't even care about the social aspects. People can look at them. People cannot look at them. I don't care. Just I want to be able to access them from every machine. Kevin.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel exactly the same way about Delicious, especially because the browser integration with Firefox, and I assume IE, although I don't really use IE, is so good. It's just totally seamless. That it's better than the integrated bookmarks, and it's shared. So it's a total no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. I do find myself leaning more and more that way with other stuff. I've never really been into the USB key, thing, carrying around my stuff. I don't know, it seems so sneakernet. But, increasingly I find having that stuff available from any machine is just more and more valuable to me. I can go home to my parents and access on their computer. I can pull down stuff. My wife and I, who work on different platforms, she's on a Mac, I'm on a PC, can collaborate on documents or spreadsheets or whatever. So definitely, as in the startup that is my family, so to speak, it's increasingly valuable to be able to access that stuff transparently from any machine.
I had one more thing just back on the whole business benefits. Scott, you were talking about the benefit of doing everything virtual, and that really happens if you're all in the same office building or not. But this Wired article is really worth a read. It's very interesting, and they're talking about the business benefits to a company of not having an office building, and just rent some space if you need to have a meeting or whatever. And it's kind of an aggressive idea. Doesn't seem like most companies would really want to do this, but they talk about, like, for instance, a 200 square foot cubicle costs on average $15,000 per year. And there's just all kinds of other expenses that you have for an office to have someone on site. And then when you talk about for a person, you've got, say, a normal commute, their average, they say, is $1,200 a year on fuel. Plus you've got that commute time and all that. So anyhow, there's all those financial aspects. And one other thing that's just above and beyond all that is that if you're set up and you're willing to work with remote workers, you have access to people anywhere in the world, potentially. I think it obviously works best if they're in your time zone or close to it. but you have a pool of potential employees that's enormous.
I don't know what the reluctance is behind the well, I think I understand most of it. It's the same reluctance that drives the lack of adoption of the paperless office. You know, at some point people just love to have a piece of paper they can hold, and it's easier to read when you're sitting on the bus going home, or when you're sitting in your cubicle, or you need to kick back and change your seat position rather than sitting there, you know, staring at the table or staring at the monitor with your knees at 90 and your back straight up and down. It's nice to be able to go and sit in another chair out in the lobby or something and read a printout rather than having to grab a laptop and take that with you and have your crotch heat up because the battery is, you know, overheating or whatever, the CPU. And I think that's the same reason that people aren't adopting the kind of virtual office that the article discusses. Managers don't like it when you aren't there. They like to be able to go and, you know, find you and make sure that you're working. And I think it's, well, I've got a lot of theories behind why managers need to check up on you. And I think it's because their job really only requires 50% effort. But, you know, that can be a whole other topic someday. John?
Well, yeah, just a quick response to that is that I think that it's easy for everyone to feel busy when everyone's rushing around an office and you're running in and out of meetings and, you know, you're walking around and, you know, it's like anyone can look busy with a clipboard, you know, running down a hallway. But when you focus on productivity, and really that's the primary thing, it's like, what are we accomplishing? What are our projects doing? What are we doing? Then I think a lot of that goes away. If you're able to just come back to a common metric of getting work done, then, you know, a manager doesn't need to sit and watch you every minute of the day if the work that they need done gets done. I do think a lot of it comes down to trust. You have to build up trust that you're actually doing your work and you're not screwing around. And the way you do that is you get your work done. So... But I do think that it's most managers are not comfortable or confident that they're, you know, if somebody says they're going to work remote, that they'll actually work remote.
And I think part of it is that a lot of managers are sadly less technical than the people that they're managing. And so, you know, they don't understand the kind of and the concentration or the flow that you get into as a developer. And so they don't understand, you know, why you can't just keep programming when people come by every 15 minutes to ask you a question or the email pops up and demands your attention. And so, you know, I've always found that, you know, I can either get 4 hours work done in 8 hours at the office with the other four being taken up by meetings and having to go out for lunch and yada, 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 or I can get 4 hours of work done at home in 4 hours. Okay, well, that just about wraps up this edition of Herding Code. We'll see you next week.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact...
Sorry, K-Scott.
That's okay. I had one confession to make.
Go ahead.
It looks like he's gone.
Awesome.
Man, he left us hanging.
Son of a bitch.
I have a confession to make.
I have a confession. Click.
He chickened out.
Tune in next week.
He's playing the interview. Maybe his confession is like, the police are at my door, you know, something like that.
The FBI again. Should we play elevator music?
I think we have a case got back on the line.
I'm back.
Awesome. And better than ever. So you left us with the greatest I have a confession to make. Click.
Oh, really? Is that when it cut out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that, yeah, I have a Gmail account, and I subscribe to a couple of mailing lists through that. But I'm mostly still centered on my desktop. Can anyone still hear me? Hello?
Yeah, but that's nothing like we were imagining.
That was it?
We thought the FBI was in the door again.
We were waiting to hear about the nuns and, you know, the FBI.
Yeah, the suspense got built up too much when I dropped out.
Whoa, it got really quiet.
I stopped talking.
That's what it's like. No.